From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. Today, we are recording this on June 3rd, 2020. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccans. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this stuff they don't want you to know. As we record today, cities and towns across the United States and the world are the staging ground for numerous peaceful protests against ongoing police brutality and long-standing discrimination against the Black community of the United States. Escalation has resulted in violence as authorities resort to what are sometimes misleadingly called less than lethal tactics to force these groups to disperse. We are three mostly white dudes, and we stand in solidarity with our fellow Black citizens. Black lives matter. Anything said to distract from, discredit, or dilute that statement goes squarely against the stated principles of this government in its founding documents, and crucially, it goes against what it means to be a human being. We don't have all the answers. It would be false to pretend that we do. The good news is that there are many organizations and activists out there now, easy to find, with the resources to help address injustice. And what we can do on this show, as has always been our aim, is to arm you with information many, including those in power, do not want you to know. With this in mind, we want to give you and our fellow listeners crucial information about protests, what they are, how they work, and most importantly, the tactics used by opponents, legal and illegal, to sabotage them. So, here are the facts.
Well, to start off with, the act of protest is, in fact, your right as a citizen of the United States, regardless of how you might personally feel about these protests or protests in general. It is something that from the very onset, the establishment of this country in the U.S. Constitution has been a primary guiding principle for the United States as a nation. The right to protest is literally in the First Amendment of the Constitution. Stating the obvious here for many, but imagine that lawmakers of the time, the all too imperfect founding fathers, as we refer to them, you know, were sitting in that back room debating on how to create a living document. And when they wrote the first part of the Constitution, they likely were spitballing back and forth ways to make sure that this could be adaptable to, you know, changing circumstances. And when they wrote that very First Amendment, they wrote these words.
Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances.
There's definitely some dated language in there, right? And it can be a little bit to unpack, but it's fairly direct, right? It's fairly direct, especially for a legal document. In essence, the government here cannot legally interfere with your religion, one. I mean, that's part of why the U.S. is a great place to start a religion. That's a story for another day. It also says that Uncle Sam has to let you and the media say what you want or what they want with a massive amount of fine print there that we've covered in some other episodes. And there's that most important part that you hit, Matt, for today's show. All people have the right to assemble peaceably or peacefully, as we would say now. That means think about this. That means that literally, if everyone in this country decided to drop what we're doing right now, walk outside to the nearest parks, and we decided to sing the entire catalog of Nickelback, then the Constitution is down with that ridiculous decision. And that also means that if you wish, instead of joining some nationwide Nickelback tribute, you can publicly press the government for change.
Yeah, I mean, you know, certainly your fellow park attendees might look at you askance if they're not as into Nickelback as you are. And there might even be some cops there that would look at you funny, but they certainly wouldn't stop you from doing it. And I love the idea of redress of grievances. That's sort of part of that dated language you were mentioning, Ben. But it's really simple. It's the idea of expressing change that you want to see in the status quo and addressing it peacefully in a public setting, and the notion that you should not be interfered with, as long as that peacefully is the key word there.
Yeah. I mean, on paper, top notch, right? Home run on paper. This is a series of rights that many, many, many people in many other countries have historically not possessed. And it's a series of rights that many countries do not grant in the modern day. And that's because when everyone in charge of enforcing these laws is, in fact, obeying the laws that they are supposed to obey, this series of rights is a profoundly powerful thing. But, you know, the old adage holds true, right? There's many a slip twixt the cup and the lip. And the U.S., again, like many places, has a terrible, abominable track record at obeying its own laws.
And when a protest is, for one reason or another, something that is not wanted by those in power, there are emergency powers that can be deployed to do all kinds of things, including right now that we're seeing to enforce curfews, which, you know, in cities across the United States, there are curfews that are happening tonight, which is, in fact, an hour earlier than it had been previously tonight. Again, as we record this in Atlanta.
Can I say really, really quickly, these curfews are tricky in and of themselves because it's hard to know for folks that are like at work, for example. Like a friend of mine was working at a restaurant. They're back at working in restaurants, waiting tables. And her boss knew about the curfew, but did not share that information with his employees. And they are not allowed to have their phones on them while they're working. So for something like a curfew to be so heavily enforced, heavy-handedly enforced, is really tricky when the information isn't reaching the people who need it. And I've been moving, for example, while all of this has been going on in Atlanta. And a couple of times I didn't get the notification on my phone. And luckily, Ben, you texted me and made sure I was safe and told me what the curfew was. And I was about 15 minutes away from missing it. And I've been seeing, you know, a lot of stuff in the news about people very much getting into some difficult situations for missing this curfew, whatever their race might be.
And curfews are only one of the tools within the belt of the peoples in power, and they could be used to quell protesting. And one of the major components to this is that the people who are in power, who are meant to actually enforce the laws, to keep law and order, they may have their own agendas. Specifically, they may have an agenda that is in complete opposition to the cause of the protesters.
Right, right. Remember back in the days of the 1960s protests, quite a few members of law enforcement were themselves also members of militaristic supremacist organizations, not the right people for the job. In other words, also there's trickery in the enforcement of these kind of powers or the deployment, the way they're rolled out. The first Atlanta curfew, which was at 9 p.m., was announced via text at about 9:13 p.m., and protesters were also blocked from egress. So they were going to be subject to violating a curfew that they were physically unable to comply with. These exact problems are why protests matter. These situations themselves prove why protest should remain a fundamental right in this country and why they are so important. They are a direct method of expression that can be used when other channels of expression have become compromised or when they have failed, when they have collapsed entirely. Look back at history. Protest in this country led to voting rights for women. Protests have led to policy change, to the enactment, or at least the writing of, better laws. and to the repeal of horrific ones. Protests lead to more rights for more people. At least they have the ability to do so. And if you look at the history of protests in this country, you will see that they have often been successful. I know that's something that, you know, the mainstream media doesn't really talk about when they talk about modern protests. It's safe to pat yourself on the back when you look at history from a distance.
Well, and we'll get into this as well, but in the media right now, who are clearly grappling, you know, on how to cover these protests in a measured way, you know, typically journalism isn't opinion-based, so it needs to lean on facts. But the idea of what is a protest, what is a revolt, what is a revolution, what is an uprising, these things are very much front and center in this conversation around what's going on right now. Very quickly, a protest can become something more resembling an uprising. And that does typically involve violence and destruction and behavior that can be demonized by those in power and used to discredit a movement.
The cold hard fact is that protests, not always, but generally, are against something that is happening within the current power structure, the current system, right? The status quo that exists. And oftentimes when there are protests, powerful people at the tops of, you know, whatever food chain you're thinking of, they won't want to have that change, whatever it is that the protester is seeking, because it would mean they would have to change. The system itself would have to change. The things that give them, you know, power and oftentimes money would have to change. I mean, why would someone who was a part of that system, you know, necessarily want to have that done, right? I mean, it's kind of a tricky thing to even talk about, but giving away power and money and whatever that thing is, those two would be probably the highest things. That's not something that happens very often willingly.
No, and really quickly, just to clarify my previous comment, when I was talking about the idea of an uprising versus a protest, obviously so much of what we're seeing right now is absolutely peaceful protest, but then you are hearing, like I heard a woman, a black woman on the radio the other day talking about how she wants to just burn it all down because nothing else has worked. And the only way to truly enact change is to mess with the power holders' money and to actually do things that they will notice, because it's easy to just brush off the idea of a peaceful protest if you're one of those holders of the power that actually can affect change, and you don't want to relinquish that. It's when their money and their property and their infrastructure is threatened. And this is, you know, I'm not trying to get off the subject here, because we are talking about something a little different, but that is something that there is, you know, this notion that peaceful protests don't always work. And some of the protests you're talking about then that led to those changes did ultimately turn into something more resembling a revolt or an uprising.
And while the times and the circumstances may change, the people in power for a very, very long time have commonalities in the tactics that they use to exploit a movement, to depower protest and to attempt to essentially hinder the progress of the movements associated with those protests, to put them into maybe three broad categories. One, you want to discredit a movement. If you're the person in power who feels like, as you said, Matt, your status as being one of the haves is threatened. This takes a number of routes. For example, why not associate a movement with something negative? Focus media coverage on, say, rioters and looters or property damage rather than the message of that movement. Also, launch counter-protest, whether astroturfed or whether whipped up by discrediting movements online. All protests now also take place online. That's important to remember. And aim those counter-protesters, whether they are paid, which is definitely a thing, or however they get there, aim them at the existing protest. All of that happens, and honestly, it is highly unethical, but there are very few laws constraining the use of those tactics. And that's like, that does not even count what I would say are the other two officially known and condoned tactics, like smear tactics.
Yeah, and this is a big one that oftentimes isn't even known until years after, because this one involves really blackmail, specifically finding dirt on, you know, leaders within a movement. That is something that really does happen, or, you know, using connections within the media, or, you know, just again, with the access of social media, you can do it, you know, with a single person and start a rumor to publicly smear or gaslight, or, you know, like we said, blackmail some leader of a movement. And we saw this with COINTELPRO, where the government itself was attempting to blackmail Dr. Martin Luther King.
And it doesn't even take like dirt or blackmail necessarily. It can be just done with rhetoric, by reframing a leader of a movement as a radical or as a terrorist or whatever. Like, you know, people in power with a very big megaphone and a very tall bully pulpit can just use their words to reframe someone that has good intentions and has a very just aim and discredit them just using words. And that word gaslighting that you mentioned, I mean, that's what that is when you're making people who follow them think maybe they're wrong. Maybe that this person actually is a bad person, and it makes you question your own motivations. And that's a very powerful thing that people in power are able to do just by speaking.
Well, no, you're absolutely right, Noel. Controlling how a protest is viewed by the viewership or listenership within, especially television right now, we've seen it where, you know, we see words like protest, and then also this same group of people doing something described as, you know, rioters, same group of people described as looters, and oftentimes it's not the same people that are being talked about, but, you know, if you look on your screen, it looks the same. You know, I guess just what I'm saying is that you can depict the way an end user of media views a group of people specifically in protest by the language you use around those images.
One of the tremendous misconceptions in the modern world today is that there is democratization of media. That is not, in fact, the case. What is collectively referred to as the media right now has a lot in common with the Taco Bell menu. I think I've made this comparison before. If you look at, you know, the menu of a drive-thru, a Taco Bell, I'm just picking on them because they're an excellent example, then you will see, what, 20, 30 different things on the menu? They all have the same 5 to 10 ingredients. These things are fingers on a hand, and they are meant to appear separate. And that is very much by design. There are the groups who control what you see and what you hear. There are far fewer of them than, you know, people would assume. That's something that makes it so easy to do the next category, which is to co-opt the movement. It's the next step in controlling the narrative. This is something that you may be hearing reports of in Portland recently. The logic is this, and it gets slippery and illegal very quickly. Why bother attacking a leader when you can have an agreement with one? A backdoor quid pro quo, scratching backs kind of deal. You know, furthermore, why make a deal when you can simply create a leader to make the public moves within the protest while also furthering your agenda? Be very careful when, you know, there's someone who seems new to a community, an activist community, and they have a lot of grand, very extreme ideas, and also have a tendency to tell you, if you're a veteran activist, what this is really about. The narrative shift is real. I don't want to be alarmist, but it happens. You can also, again, because all of this stuff is occurring online too, you can see the creation of fake accounts meant to push the conversation, just like in the 2016 election and other movements, you know, to try to lead a protest in a direction the people in power want it to go. Russia has objectively had some great programs with this, and they're very old, like Operation Infection, it was called in the U.S., decades and decades and decades ago. It is naive to think that's not happening now.
But there's also a massive elephant in the room right now. And it's one that's often ignored by the mainstream media that we're talking about, those fingers on the same hand, those Taco Bell ingredients. But common knowledge to folks who are veterans in the protest game. And that's that whenever there's a peaceful gathering of protesters that somehow becomes violent, no matter what the scale of the violence is, again, it's all about those optics and the interpretation of, okay, this is now giving us the cause to push the button to quell said violence. These peacekeeping forces now have a reason to pull the trigger on this idea of, okay, this is now no longer a peaceable assembly redressing grievances. Now we are moving into go mode to quell that violence, aka shut down that protest. So the big question today is, how and why do peaceful protests in cities across the entire planet, but particularly in the U.S., so often result in these kinds of incidents that involve destruction of property or violence? What is there to gain from this? Why is this happening?
And we'll talk about that right after a quick word from our sponsor.
Here's where it gets crazy. First, an important point. It is not our aim to tell anyone how to protest. And it would be offensive to do so. This, however, is, again, a mission to arm you with information, to arm you with things people in power do not want you to know. And one of the things that people in power do not want you to know about protest is that there are numerous bad actors. There is enormous opportunity for people on the ground to exploit the actual cause, the actual motivating force of a protest or a movement for their own insidious and nefarious ends. This is not a conspiracy theory. This is a conspiracy. Everything that you are going to hear in this episode, from this point on, definitely, is true. And it should alarm you. We're talking about infiltration. Longtime listeners, you already know the elephant in the room here is what is called the agent provocateur. But let's get some background first.
Yes, and just quick background on that search term. If you put in agent provocateur without some other terms, you're going to get a lingerie company. So just be aware of that. Not very helpful when researching something like this. For some of this, I kind of want to start it with an article from the New York Times that was written by Jim Dwyer in 2005, just because it gives some much needed background here. And this is a fairly long quote here, but we're going to go with it and then we'll build off of it. Here's the quote. The federal courts have long held that undercover officers can monitor political activities for a, quote, legitimate law enforcement purpose. While the police routinely conduct undercover operations in plainly criminal circumstances, the illegal sale of weapons, for example, surveillance at political events is laden with ambiguity. To retain cover in those settings, officers might take part in public dialogue, debate, and demonstration at the risk of influencing others to alter opinions or behavior. The authority of the police to conduct surveillance of First Amendment activities has been shaped over the years not only by the law, but also by the politics of the movement and the perception of public safety needs. In a 1971 class action lawsuit, New York City acknowledged that the police department had used infiltrators, undercover agents, and fake news reporters to spy on, quote, yippies, civil rights advocates, anti-war activists, labor organizers, and black power groups.
But all that was under like the auspices of like, we just want to keep an eye on it in case so that we can maintain law and order. It's not necessarily to shut down protests, you know, on paper. It's not necessarily to discredit any of these organizations on paper. The idea was we need to be able to, you know, have our finger on the pulse of what's going on with these types of organizations, right?
Perhaps. But the important thing here is that law enforcement has infiltrated these groups perhaps prior to a protest taking place.
Mm-hmm. Just like several years ago, the FBI was caught out because they had sent people to infiltrate Muslim communities here in the United States. And these infiltrators were attempting to radicalize people, it's called, right? Attempting to say, let's start building some bombs, let's start committing, you know, these felonious acts. And this disturbed the members of these communities so much that they reported the FBI's own agents to the FBI and said, please arrest these people.
Well, it's like entrapment, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's very close. There will be lawyers who disagree, but I would say it's unethical to pretend that it's not. And this is like an agent provocateur. Think of it like genre and subgenre. An agent provocateur is a genre, a category of this phenomenon. Not every protester is who they purport to be. As noted in this earlier video we have, which is a little dated, but still holds up in terms of tactics.
And you can find it, by the way, you have to search for Dirty Tricks, Agent Provocateur, and it's on the old How Stuff Works YouTube channel, just so everybody knows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these protesters, or these people purporting to be protesters, have a different underlying agenda, an ulterior motive, and this is known as the agent provocateur. A couple examples, someone who is not associated with a movement, but is present to incite, you know, these acts of violence to push people there. And again, this is not the same thing as saying the only good protest is a peaceful one. We're just presenting the facts. This is the aim of the agent provocateur. They're the people who, for some reason, want citizens and law enforcement to clash. And these agent provocateur have their own subcategories as well. They are not all the same. Some are ideologically motivated. They're unpaid. They might be someone like an anarchist, which I think is, of course, an umbrella term. I don't want to paint a broad brush here, but there might be members of some anarchist groups or factions of some anarchist groups who say, I don't care what this protest is about, but I do care to dismantle a system, right? Or to create chaos, to become an agent of chaos. You'll also see people who are ideologically camouflaging themselves, like the alt-right Proud Boy groups, confirmed in the Pacific Northwest, who participated in the recent protest with the express cause of inciting violence.
And there's also an immediate example we could point to that just happened, a few days ago, where an unknown person holding an umbrella and wearing a gas mask came up and just began smashing windows when there was a peaceful assembly occurring, and it just seemed like it was for no reason. And, you know, there were all kinds of rumors on social media and a couple of videos made of this person where he was purported, allegedly to be a police officer, then allegedly to be an anarchist. And it's just at this point, unless you guys have other knowledge, this person is unknown, but they made it to where a report could go out to the police then that vandalism had occurred in this one specific area, which could potentially then send a police force to that immediate area.
And this tactic is older than police forces. It is much, much older than you may think. It was something that the human species figured out in ancient times. This happened, you know, this is older than the U.S., The reason the term is French is it comes from modern undercover operations that were instituted in France in the early 1800s. But the reason people keep using agent provocateur tactics is because they work. I mean, you mentioned COINTELPRO earlier, Matt. Just to be specific about that, during COINTELPRO, which has arguably never ended, maybe just changed names the way that Blackwater became Academy, became XE or whatever. During COINTELPRO's activities, FBI agents infiltrated groups and they infiltrated protests. They were supposed to be monitoring these things, but they also disrupted and sabotaged them. These groups include things like the Ku Klux Klan, the KKK, but they also include things like the American Indian movement. They include things like student groups that were considered dangerously left-wing by the people in power. And we know this continues into the modern day easily.
Yeah, I mean, the ACLU called for an investigation of possible Denver PD agents attempting to incite violence against police during the 2008 Democratic National Convention. And someone who's a member of law enforcement or a faction of the government could absolutely be considered an agent provocateur. Undercover officers are often known to use tactics to kind of escalate these protests, especially in the United States. Officially, they're there to maintain the peace and protect everyone involved, but that absolutely changes when someone associated with the law purposefully tries to spark violence by damaging property or urging peaceful protesters to that point you made earlier, Ben, about with the Muslim community trying to kind of entrap or incite, I guess entrap maybe is too loaded a term, peaceful protesters to attack police or damage property.
And we saw an example of this in 2007 that's included in our video, where in Canada there was a pretty large peaceful protest occurring, and three men who were wearing all black and covering their faces, and at least one of them was carrying a rock, and they, you know, appeared to be acting very aggressive towards police, and they were called out by the peaceful protesters. And you can watch videos on this right now. You can check it out. And you can just see how those men then crossed the police line and were, it looked like they were being arrested perhaps, but they were, you know, just taken away to somewhere else, probably went back to their post. Who knows?
Theatrically arrested, I would say.
For sure. And even right now, I mean, there's obviously so much information and everyone's got a camera, you know, on their phone. So there's a flood of videos and information that's out there surrounding the protests that they're going on right now. But I saw a video where it was someone calling out the police for damaging their own car. It's a video where you can literally see a police SUV type vehicle and a gentleman in police uniforms standing on top of it and smashing the window themselves. And damaging the car. It was in the distance. Perhaps it's easy to misconstrue what's actually going on, but that certainly was the impression that the person making the video had. They called them out and said, "I see what you're doing. I see what you're doing."
One common question would be, how do piles of bricks conveniently end up on sidewalks approaching a protest? And you'll see people claiming that it is, in fact, law enforcement that's doing that. But there's another question here, too, that we need to outline. Should be, it may be painfully obvious, but we need to outline it. What is the goal here for an agent provocateur? Who are these people who are camouflaging themselves physically and ideologically in order to perpetrate this counterintelligence, these acts of deceit? Well, there can be more than one aim. First, the first aim is, as you guys mentioned earlier, to somehow make incredibly violent crackdowns by law enforcement seem not just justified, but inevitable, to make them seem to be the right sort of thing to do. The police in this country are and have been heavily militarized in a process that, by the way, occurred in step with massive defunding of education. Just going to point that out. And the second goal would be to discredit a movement. Because again, like we've said, we can't say it enough. Watch your local news. And if one thing happens that would be violent, if one thing happens that fits the definition of, you know, that which bleeds is that which leads, then that is what the media will tend to talk about, and they will tend to, it sounds like I'm painting with a broad brush, but there is a common prevalence here of focusing on that sort of stuff. And then when that happens, that is all the news cycle talks about. There's no more talk of what the aims of the protest were, what kind of change would the protesters like to see, what kind of world do we want to live in? It's just a Target got robbed.
Yeah, it's a very easy way of reframing the narrative and burying the lead changing the conversation. It's a way of hijacking that cause and turning it into demonizing the byproducts of that cause, which may very well have been entirely peaceful, but then are completely reframed, like we were talking about earlier, how you can discredit a movement with purely just with rhetoric and the way that you refer to things and with the news cycle. And that starts in positions of power and often filters down to the news organizations.
I would just say I'm in a position where I've been looking at a lot of archival footage of the civil rights movement and the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. And what you're talking about here, guys, is exactly what you can see in the reporting that immediately follows the 1968 assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, where there was such anger and fear and unrest that immediately followed that assassination that there were massive protests. There was, you know, to an extent, a bit of, I don't know how you describe it. Just there were a lot of people on the streets, and there was smashing of windows and breaking into of stores that occurred. But the framing on this, you know, very dated at this point, media and mass media that was coming out and reporting about it, it's all framed on the, you know, quote looting. And the in a very similar way that you're seeing today, looting and riots.
Well, it's a way of saying, oh, if you're going to behave like this, you don't deserve the change that you so desperately seek, you know, because look at the way you're behaving. You know, if you really deserved this thing that you want, you would go about it a different way. That's me speaking like as the voice of, you know, the powers that be. And that's the way the conversation is attempted to be steered.
And speaking of steering the conversation, I'm going to take us back to another aim of agent provocateurs that needs to be said, okay? And this is something that this is something that is terrifying, but it is also real, at least in terms of an aim. And that is the goal of not just strengthening a rationalization for the actions of the oppositional forces, but to spark a larger conflict. I'm not talking about, you know, making a situation where innocent people are arrested, which agent provocateurs do. I'm talking about creating something that goes beyond the scope of a single protest, widespread unrest and violence, a coup, a civil war. There are groups now. You can find them. Robert Evans has done some excellent reporting on this, where there are groups that are openly advocating to push things toward a civil war. I cannot recommend his podcast, It Could Happen Here, enough. I do suggest you check it out as soon as you have the time. And these are just a few examples. We have more specific examples, including first-party confessions that said, yes, I did this. I did this on purpose. Here's why.
Yeah. I mean, in 2011, The Guardian reported that a gentleman named Patrick Howley, who was the assistant editor at The American Spectator, actually admitted to having infiltrated an Occupy Wall Street protest that was held at the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum, specifically with the aim of discrediting it. And here's a quote directly from the man himself. Quote, as far as anyone knew, I was part of this cause, a cause that I had infiltrated the day before in order to mock and undermine in the pages of the American Spectator. And I wasn't giving up before I had my story.
Yeah, if you continue reading on in this article, it describes how there were guards at the protest, officers essentially, who used pepper spray on a lot of the protesters who were attempting to enter into the museum. And when you look at Halley's account, he continues on and condemns the protesters. And this is what he says, quote, he condemns their lack of nerve to confront authority. And he himself wanted to escalate things. Like, that was kind of the point. He was fully determined to do that, and he rushed past the security guards into the museum. And it's crazy too, if you go back and you try and find his official accounting of it or the story that he wrote about it, because I was unable to find an undoctored version of it. I could only find it in this, or I guess a version of it like this in The Guardian.
And just really quickly, The American Spectator is a far-right conservative publication.
Yeah, it appears the magazine altered the story, right? And then tried to pull it entirely. But it had already been reported in papers of note. The Washington Post, it had been reported in online sources that are opposed to far-right publications, places like Fire Dog Lake, Daily Kos. We mentioned the earlier example of agent provocateur or undercovers in New York, but there's another specific instance that resulted in actual criminal charges. This person was convicted. They went to prison.
Yeah, it's true. An undercover motorcycle officer, an unnamed undercover motorcycle officer, was caught on video breaking into a car window and actually assaulting the driver of a vehicle that had hit another motorcycle. And in 2015, he was sent to prison for second-degree assault, coercion, riot, and criminal mischief.
And just to continue on here, we haven't finished talking about the different kinds of agent provocateurs. Here, there are different versions. And one of them, Ben, you already mentioned called, or a tactic at least, called astroturfing.
Astroturfing is when something that appears to be a grassroots, on-the-ground movement or community is in fact the creation of often a front company or political institution that is funneling power from the status quo into their so-called protest. Again, it's camouflage. Some people who appear to protest are paid to do so, or they're being organized by front groups that are funded by powerful corporations, powerful institutions. There's an article I quite like and recommend from the LA Times. And this tells the story of, this is an old one too, this is from 2018. It tells the story of a firm called Crowds on Demand. Have you guys heard of these people?
No, Ben, I've never heard of that. What? Tell me about it.
So Crowds on Demand is a firm based, or was at the time, a firm based in Beverly Hills that hires protesters. Back in the day, you could go to its website and you would see that it provides its clients with, quote, protests, rallies, flash mobs, paparazzi events, other inventive PR stunts. We provide everything, including the people, the materials, and even the ideas. But what kind of stuff have they been hired to do? They're hiring actors to do things like lobby the City Council of New Orleans on behalf of power plants, or to act like fake fans for life coaches at conferences in LA. It runs the gamut. There was also someone who, you know, there was a lawsuit filed that said the Crowds on Demand organization does much more shady stuff. And, you know, we could make this an episode of its own, but it has to be mentioned here.
I agree. This is an entire episode. You have probably read things online, either rumors or purported facts about various powerful people using such organizations like Crowds on Demand to get people either to political rallies or to, you know, stand outside of a building in Washington, D.C. or something. You know, you undoubtedly have seen that stuff going around. And let's just say we're going to continue to look into it.
Again, these are facts. This is happening. This is for people who are unconcerned with the ethics, this is a good business for them to be in. They are a kind of what is called an opportunist. The people who started Crowds on Demand are opportunists. There's a different thing that I think would qualify as opportunist in this realm of navigating how protests work and how these bad actors work in them. Bad actors, then, I guess, is a poor choice of words, given Crowds on Demand. But of course, there are opportunists involved. When you see reports talking specifically to the people who, for some reason, say, you know, I don't support this cause because I see it depicted as, you know, associated with acts of violence, opportunists are real. It's part of human nature. And think about it. If you want to rob a store, for instance, and there is a protest going on or unrest or a riot in a neighborhood, right? What better time? What better time to strike? Law enforcement is distracted, possibly overwhelmed, possibly in the midst of harming civilians. Typical response times are just going to be slower depending on your location. And if you want to rob a store located in the same area as a protest, you can potentially get the power of numbers on your side.
Then there's a lot of videos, I don't know if opportunist is the right word here, but of folks that are doing graffiti, whether it's Black Lives Matter graffiti or like, you know, ACAB, you know, the term of abuse for all cops are bastards and all of this kind of graffiti that we're seeing now. There's lots of videos circulating where actual peaceful protesters are walking up to these individuals doing this and saying, why are you doing this? We didn't ask you to do this. Like people of color are walking up to, you know, maybe white marchers or whatever who are doing this and saying, who asked you to do this? This is not helpful. And there's a lot of these videos circulating where, you know, folks are getting in each other's faces because they're saying, oh, well, I did it because I support the cause. And then they're basically saying, well, this is not helping us. This is not supporting the cause. So I don't know if you would lump those folks in as opportunists or if they're just maybe overstepping. I don't know, but it definitely, some folks just want to watch the world burn and want to get out there and cause trouble. And what better opportunity to be able to go out there and do that than, you know, masquerading behind a cause.
So there you have it. There are just numerous examples of someone, some group, some individual infiltrating a peaceful protest movement for one reason or another, for varying, you know, seeking varying outcomes for doing so. So let's say that you find yourself in the midst of a protest, peaceful or otherwise. What do you need to do to prepare yourself? We're going to talk about that right after a word from our sponsor.
And at the top of this section, it's important to thank everybody who reached out to us or to the show to ask about this information. We're going to run through real quick some basic things, some basic resources for protests. Again, this is not in any way meant to tell anyone anything about how to protest. These are safety tips that have been time-tested, right? And protester approved. Organizations like Amnesty International have these brilliant handy checklists that you can and should consult before hitting the streets. This is not the time for improvisation. Here are a few tips. We've got a physical checklist, right? Some basic things you should consider when protesting. Clothing, right?
Yeah, ideally you want some kind of sturdy boots, some shoes. They're going to stand up to having to run. And also be careful not to wear, you know, maybe military surplus boots that are often worn by undercover police officers, because you don't want to be accused of that for sure. Sturdy pants are important. A long sleeve top is going to be important, and something you can use to cover your face or your head in case tear gas or something else is released that's going to make it difficult for you to breathe.
Yeah, and you know, this is almost like, it reminds me of our go bag episode. You know, these are just very functional tips of things that maybe you wouldn't necessarily think of, but that are going to, you know, go a long way for you. Water in a plastic bottle seems obvious, but a squirt top if possible, because you may be able to use that to flush out chemicals from your eyes. That's going to be really important, and that giving that stream a little more force is going to help make that happen and flush out tear gas potentially from your eyes, which as it turns out is like a powder that is converted into a mist. It's not even a liquid, so it's literally like washing out, you know, solids that have found their way into your eyes. So the only way to do that is, you know, what better alternative to an eye wash station like in a science lab than a pressure, you know, propelled stream of water from a squirt top water bottle. And also a little additive would be to have some baking soda on hand that you can add to that water solution, 3 teaspoons of powder for every 8.5 ounces of liquid. And then, you know, just stuff like snacks to keep your energy up, you know, like a Kind bar, like, you know, those, what are those called? Cliff bars, things like that. Anything that like is very nutrient dense in a small package.
One quick important note about whether or not you should bring your ID or NID with you to a protest. The laws may vary state by state, so be sure to check in advance before you hit the streets. We'll talk a little bit about this in organization, but the one, I would say one crucial point to remember is to physically write a contact number on your arm for legal assistance. Don't make the mistake of thinking that you'll have a phone or that you'll have your phone working because you may be offered a chance if you're arrested or detained to make one phone call. And if you don't have that number with you, you may not be able to find it. So write it on yourself.
Definitely bring some kind of money. In the United States, it's going to be paper. You might need this for some kind of emergency situation, transportation, food, whatever it is. Just make sure you don't carry a bunch of cash because, as we said, there are going to be undoubtedly some opportunists around, or at least in a lot of cases, there will be some who may see that as an opportunity to take your money.
And to be clear, that term could apply to unethical police officers or law enforcement as well.
Speaking of which, you know, you want to have a watch, you want to have paper and a pen. You don't want to necessarily rely on your phone, but I also saw a really interesting point where you may want to turn off face recognition unlocking from your phone because a bad actor, law enforcement agent could just hold it up to your face and then have access to your entire contact list, any potential notes that you have, you know, and could just go through your whole life on your phone and use that information against you.
I would say perhaps a track phone would be a good idea rather than your actual phone because, you know, as we've talked about in previous episodes, there is tracking technology when there are a lot of people gathered in something like this, especially if it's a political protest where law enforcement of one kind or another may be tracking to see who is there.
And airplane mode doesn't really make a difference, to be honest with you. The only thing that would make a big difference would be physically removing the battery or placing a phone in a Faraday cage, essentially. A basic first aid kit if you have room. Remember, you're there to support and help your fellow protesters and to help your cause, not there to get some kind of congratulatory selfie. Last thing, eye protection. Don't wear contacts. These are small, very basic things. They're there to protect you. What about organization?
Really quickly, just back to social media. I thought it was very interesting how there was this Blackout Tuesday situation where people were posting these black squares on Instagram. And there was very quickly a backlash against that because people were using the hashtag Black Lives Matter. And it really... It is so important, these hashtags. It seems frivolous when you think about, oh, social media is all about, you know, showing out and being seen and you know, kind of lifestyle stuff. But when it comes to stuff like this, those kinds of hashtags are how that information is organized. So if you co-opt a hashtag like Black Lives Matter for a black square, that's sort of a, you know, I don't want to call it performative. It's definitely an act of solidarity. And I did it myself. But very quickly, people started posting, yo, don't use that hashtag, because you're erasing other people's actually valuable information that is using that hashtag and it's organized, you know, ways to search for, you know, up to the minute information. So they created a, you know, a hashtag Blackout Tuesday. So I just think that's interesting how important social media is in all of this kind of stuff.
Another important basic thing to be aware of is organization. You know, as you said at the top of this, it's not the time for improvisation when you set off. Have a timetable. Have people who are not at the protest aware of your location and where you plan to be afterwards. You can also have accountability with your groups that you go with. Have a meeting spot that is outside of where you think the protest will be so you can confirm everyone's safety and so you can have a destination and a plan.
Situational awareness at a protest is highly important. We would recommend avoiding drugs or alcohol or anything else that's going to impair, you know, your judgment or reaction time. And you always have to be able to react to that danger immediately and, you know, not be held back by whatever substance you're doing.
Not to mention, you don't want to have some contraband on you that can be also used against you if you are searched. And then that gives, you know, law enforcement a reason to lock you up.
Yeah. Print out or obtain what's called a bust card. This is, think of like a, it's like a very small, easy to carry piece of paper that bullet points out your legal rights, some do's and don'ts, contact numbers. You know, you can find many examples of this from different countries, and it's a handy thing to have. Of course, you know, the question there is who has a printer, right? You may be in a situation where you find people who are distributing these for free.
And lastly, just at all times, be ready to, you know, help out someone who's next to you who is protesting. You can provide support for people in all sorts of different ways, you know, especially if there's somebody who, you know, is getting tired, who has some kind of medical condition, who is dehydrated or has been injured for one reason or another. Just remember to, you know, be there for everyone, and also to not let bad actors go unnoticed.
Let's talk about something equally important, which is maybe even more important, which is what not to do. So in some of our conversation, you know, it's obvious that people have different opinions and everybody has the same specific answers. But these things are pretty solid. First, and I think this answers a lot of questions people have about what they should or shouldn't bring. Don't carry things that you cannot afford to lose. Do not assume everyone is there for the same reason as you.
Yeah, I think we've more than covered. That's sort of the whole point of this episode, is that there are many reasons, many agendas that might lead people to come to these types of events. And a lot of them are not in your best interest. People are not aligned with what you are there for a lot of the time. So just never assume. And don't wear things that can easily be grabbed. You know, you might want to put your hair up in a tight bun rather than wearing it in pigtails or a ponytail or something that can be used to drag you to the ground, for example. Or, you know, pieces of clothing that are very baggy that could be grabbed as well. That would be something that you would want to avoid.
And there are a lot of things you could put on your body. A lot of them are moisturizers or would be used as some kind of moisturizer, sometimes sunscreens, mineral oils, or Vaselines. These things can actually trap some of the chemicals that may be sprayed in your direction or released and hit you, and it will stick to your skin. And, you know, it will essentially amplify the effects. So do not, don't do that.
And this is difficult, but do your best to think critically. Be aware that misinformation, as well as active disinformation, misinformation is kind of something that's accidentally not true. Disinformation is something that's purposely not true. That's the best way to remember it. Both of these can proliferate at an extremely quick rate, especially when we see lines of traditional normal communication breaking down. And lastly, do not go alone if you can help it.
Yeah, I would say that's pretty important. At the very least, if you have to go alone, make sure someone's got your back remotely and that they know where you are, and that you can reach somebody to let them know if things go south.
We hope this information is helpful. Again, there are more resources. Many organizations that have these bus cards, that have these checklists, that have recommendations, do's and don'ts. Please do look into these. And again, there is one main takeaway from this episode. The conspiracy to discredit and to escalate protest counter to the aims of a protest are real. This stuff does happen. Agent provocateurs do exist. They're not some sort of mythical beast. The real ones can operate successfully, and they can get away with it.
And just really quick to sew up a couple of things that we sort of foreshadowed, like, you know, there again, there's a lot of information moving very quickly, especially right now as things have escalated with our situation in the United States. But the notion of, you know, things like piles of bricks showing up and old model police cars being put out like as bait or something. A lot of that has been largely discredited. That's not to say that it's not possible that these things are real. And it's also a slippery slope when you talk about blaming a movement or a protest on external forces that are not, you know, germane to that outcry that surrounds that particular protest. It's a way of like kind of like neutering, you know, the power of that movement by saying, oh, it's actually being caused not by the real reason that it's being caused, but by something else. And I think we've done a good job today of differentiating those things. But I just want to make sure that that's clear.
And we have to absolutely remember that when we are on social media, whatever platform you use, you have to be extremely vigilant when analyzing and sharing stuff. Whatever the post is, no matter how much you agree with it, you just have to be careful and really analyze it. Because there have been, as you said there, Noel, a lot of false reports that have come out, essentially as rumors that have just spread across social media. And, you know, we kind of, you mentioned the bricks. There have been several examples posted out there that have been proven to not have anything to do with, you know, purposeful planting for uses with protesters or during the protest to escalate things. I made a note here just to call out the one that occurred in Sherman Oaks, California, where there were these metal enclosures filled with stones, and BuzzFeed News and some other people did some, you know, looking into this and found out that this was actually these were security structures for a Jewish community building in Sherman Oaks, California. And they'd been installed like a year ago prior to the protests. But that doesn't mean that every instance where bricks have been found or some kind of heavy projectiles have been found stashed near a protest area, it doesn't mean that every one of those is just an innocuous thing. It means you have to analyze each one of them individually.
Yeah, 100%.
Especially because, as I said earlier, protests nowadays occur in digital space. Please, please, please check out the earlier work on the proliferation of bots, Russian and non-Russian alike. Foreign and domestic forces are gaming the system. They're muddying the waters. They're altering the narrative with great success in the past. And the present is no different. And the future probably won't be either. I have a lighthearted example of this. My favorite current example of this phenomenon is the K-pop fans online who are flooding far right-wing hashtags with some of their favorite Korean pop. It is fantastic to see. I recommend checking that out if you want a little bit of a pick-me-up in these incredibly terrible times. I mean, these last few months have been the longest year ever.
Yeah, it really has been. Whoever controls this whole timeline thing that we're living in, this multiverse, is really piling on right now.
Cut it out, whoever you are. Jeez Louise. Yeah, and just you know, for a final note, and this is something that I have a lot of questions around, because again, we were talking about like with social media, so much information is able to be kind of hijacked and used in a way that's very shareable. Therefore, it is proliferated, but it could absolutely and often is misinformation. But one final example is you know, a lot of rumors going around, you know, on social media about groups such as what's referred to collectively as Antifa, going out to suburban areas or rural areas to carry out acts of violence. And I just want to take this opportunity to clarify something that I've personally been a little in the dark about. The notion of Antifa, I understand to mean anti-fascist, which sounds like a positive thing to me, being anti-fascist, but it's been kind of commodified as a term of abuse and almost taken on the tone of like, this is a terrorist group, the Antifa. But my understanding is that no such group per se exists. It's not a moniker that is associated with like a particular, you know, mission statement or a group of people. It's just kind of a amorphous collective. So can we just talk a little bit about what Antifa means and how it's being used, just to give folks a little perspective on that?
I would, you know, with having limited understanding of this, I would just say that it's been used in the media recently and, you know, in the past couple decades to really represent any number of smaller groups that would consider themselves perhaps anarchists or people who are against the status quo systems that are set up and just wish to see change there. But, you know, it really depends on which organization is reporting at the time or who's talking about them.
I believe that I may have mentioned this earlier. The phrase has a lot in common with the phrase anonymous, an earlier activist group that has recently been back in the news. The Achilles heel of this kind of grouping is that there is obviously no official certification to be an anti-fascist group. And the key is there is also no official certification to claim oneself a member of Anonymous. I will say, if you want to dehumanize or vilify or, you know, use a thought-terminating cliche to get past people's critical thinking faculties, then, of course, you make a term. You make a term that is pretty short, is easy to understand, and that itself, while being a portmanteau, is not, you know, an existing word, or you change it, right? And this is a tactic that's employed often. I would like to note several things that we have not covered in this episode. We've not covered Antifa. I think the anti-fascism organization, the evolution of that term, deserves its own episode, as do specific instances of people attempting to capitalize on a movement or protest for their own ends. Splinter groups, you know, militia are in there. There are a lot of internet warriors who are talking on a forum, and a certain amount of them are going into protest to attempt to push their agenda. These are things that we have to cover in a future episode, and we need your help.
Yeah, so let us know what you think. You can write to us online in the various social media spots. We are Conspiracy Stuff or Conspiracy Stuff Show on the usual platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You can also join our Facebook group, Here's Where It Gets Crazy, where there's a lot of real-time conversation that goes on around every episode we do and beyond.
You can give us a phone call if you happen to have your phone with you. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. We would encourage you to call us if possible to either report on something you're seeing, no matter where you are and what you're doing, or to just give us an idea for an episode, or just tell us what you think about all of this stuff. And if you don't want to do any of that stuff, but you still want to contact us, you can always send us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.